So I've got a bit of a history lesson today. Starting in the year of 1886, several middle distance runners around the world, in North America and Europe and even Australia, they were all actively making attempts to run the mile in under 4 minutes. It was a difficult feat, and there were a lot of people trying to do it. But the harder these runners tried, the more impossible it seemed. They would get close, but never could cross that boundary. To run a mile that quickly, to give you an idea of how fast it is to run a 4 minute mile, runners need to go at a pace of 15 miles an hour. That's really fast. To put that into perspective, I went on a bike ride yesterday, 25 miles, and I was on a fancy pants, you know, modern road bike, and my average was 15 miles an hour. To run that fast, to break the 4 minute mile, is quite a feat. To keep that pace while running is crazy fast. And for decades, once people were trying to beat that mark, running the mile in under 4 minutes just went unachieved. But in the early 1950s, there was a lot of buzz and media attention at track races where challengers would take their chances. Everybody was training for it, really trying to make this mark, break this record. And there were several contenders training and working at this very diligently. And some of you will recognize the name Roger Bannister. Roger Bannister was a Brit, and he took a bit of a different approach than most who were training. He was a full-time student. He didn't really work with any coaches at all. Their methods didn't really work for him. Instead, he chose to create his own kind of training regimen, and it worked. On a cold, wet day that seemed unideal, in 1954, in Oxford, England, on a track that really was not that well suited for running fast track races, Roger Bannister ran the mile with a time of 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds. He broke that record. Now, that was a pretty amazing feat, but that's not the most amazing part. Just a month and a half after Bannister's record, an Australian runner became the second to run that mile in less than 4 minutes, with a time of 3 minutes and 58 seconds. So think about that. For decades, people were trying to run and break this record, training diligently to do it, and within the span of a month and a half, we have two people doing it. And only 1 year later, three more runners ran the mile in less than 4 minutes in a single race. Suddenly, this feat, which many people believed was simply a physical human limit that could not be overcome, was repeated numerous times. And since then, over 1,000 people have run and beat this record. There are even 11 high school students who've been able to run the mile in under 4 minutes, including one person who broke that was able to meet that mark this year. Now, today, athletes run the mile in less than 4 minutes all the time. It's a big deal. It's quite a feat, but it is not the eye-opening thing that it once was. As soon as one person proved that this unbreachable limit was possible to beat, it was no longer a barrier in people's minds. It's clear that the physical limitations were not impacting their achievements, but rather it was the way that they thought about the achievement that allowed them to run faster. My point in bringing this up in this story is to talk about limits. We all have limits. Some are real and irrefutable. Nobody's going to run a mile in less than a minute. That's crazy, right? Nobody can run 60 miles an hour. But some limits are artificial. They are only in our heads. Some limits are affected by our lack of faith and belief that we can overcome our own personal limits. Some limits we set for ourselves for no good reason. Now that said, it's also important to note that there are some limits we set because of our convictions. All right, we here listening today are all Christians. We set certain limits that are good to have. We observe the Sabbath instead of putting other types of goals above that. It is a limit we set for ourselves. We don't work 7 days a week where we could possibly achieve more, right? While it might be possible to achieve wealth or worldly success if we dedicate our time, it may require a sacrifice to our commitment to live in a way that is obedient, a way that is righteous. We may miss out on worldly opportunities because we commit our lives to being good Christians. But those are the kinds of limits that God will reward us for. Those are good limits. We could certainly overcome certain things and achieve worldly success, but that's not what we're called to do. We have a greater calling and a much more abundant success than that we are working towards, than we can achieve in the world. As Mr. Harris mentioned, the title of my sermonette is What Limits? While that sounds like one question, it is really two. And both of the questions that I want to talk about today refer to those kinds of limits that we set for ourselves for the wrong reasons, those artificial limits, the kinds of limits that we would do better to remove from our lives. Now, the first question, what limits, asks, what are the limits that we have? What are they? I'll have you turn over to Genesis 18, where we have a really great example. And I'll begin reading in verse 9 of Genesis 18. We pick up the story when Abraham is receiving his promise. Genesis 18 and verse 9. Then they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" So he said, "Here in the tent." And he said, "I will certainly return to you according to the time of life. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I've grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'Shall I surely bear a child, since I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son.'" Here we have someone who believed in an apparent impossibility more than she was willing to believe in God. Sarah was old and beyond even the consideration of having a child, having tried and tried throughout her life with no success. And now, when she, after, you know, this body, this physical body that she had was well beyond the normal age of childbearing, now she would have a child? Didn't seem even possible. But she was reminded that those limits that she had were absolutely nothing in the eyes of God. Is anything too hard for God? Do we have limits in our lives like this? Limits that we believe that we cannot overcome. Maybe we have circumstances that are difficult or seemingly impossible. Are there things that we believe are impossible for us to do? Things that we just think we can't do? What we learn here is that if it is God's will, our job is to believe in it to do the things that move us forward and get out of God's way, because it's going to happen if it's God's will. We can do a lot to get in his way. Our job is to believe him and get out of the way. Now, we are not alone in having these kinds of limiting thoughts. We have numerous examples in the Bible that I just covered one of. Moses didn't think that it was possible to lead an entire nation of over 1 million people out of Egypt. Jeremiah didn't think that it was possible for him to be a prophet because he was so young. Elijah didn't think that it was possible to continue prophesying because he thought he was alone. I'm sure you can think of other examples. What all of those examples have in common is that God had a purpose in mind that they just would not believe. And he worked it out. These were false limits. What are your false limits? So the second question is, for those limits that we do have, what is the cause? Thinking of the word limits as a verb. What limits us? We know that God will work out his purpose for us if we let him. And if we do, things that we thought would be impossible will come to fruition. We all have a purpose in God's eyes. Sometimes that purpose might not be perfectly crystal clear, but it's there. You know it's there. And whatever it is, we have to use what we have. I talk a lot about talents, the gifts that God has given us. I do it for a reason. It's that this is what God has given us each individually. It represents what he sees as our potential. He wants us to do something with our lives to fulfill his purpose. He's going to stand behind us. He will make it happen. But we have to put some time and effort and direct our thoughts and faith behind it. Whatever it is we're purposed to do, God is there to help us. Turn with me to Isaiah 59, and I'll read verses 1 and 2. Isaiah 59 and verse 1. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, nor his ear heavy, that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated you from God, or you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you, so that he will not hear. So if we're asking what limits us, one thing that can separate us from God is sin. If we lose our way, if we start believing that the way of the world is the way to go instead of the way of obedience, we are writing God out of our plan, and his purpose is going to be much harder to fulfill without his help. That is what would be impossible. If we want God's help in overcoming our limits, we need to do what it takes to keep him on our side, working for us, helping us out. And that means getting sin out of our lives, turning away from sin and turning towards obedience. Going over to Matthew 21 and reading verses 20 through 22. Matthew 21 and verse 20. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying, "How did the fig tree wither away so soon?" We're breaking in where Christ had caused a fig tree to wither and die in a moment. Continuing in verse 21. So Jesus answered and said to them, "Assuredly, I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree, but also if you say to this mountain, 'Be removed and be cast into the sea,' it will be done. And whatever things you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive." Another thing that can limit us is simply not believing. Do we trust God? We have to trust God. Our faith is vitally important in overcoming our limits. If we don't believe that we can do it, we won't do it. But when our faith is strong, we behave in such a way that our beliefs are true. Do we believe that our health will improve? Do we believe that we'll succeed in business, that we'll build a house, that we'll write a book, or help someone who's a friend in need? Do we believe those things? Whatever it is that you have for your purpose. Do we believe that we'll be able to kick a bad habit? Do we believe that we'll be able to overcome a sin that continually traps us? Do we believe that we will be able to draw closer to God? We have to believe those things. Let's go over to Romans 8, and I'll read verses 31 and 32. Romans 8 and verse 31. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? Who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all? How shall he not with him also freely give us all things? God is on our side to overcome our limits. We all have limits. Some are simply facts that we can't do anything about. But some limits in our lives, way more than we actually think, are figments of our imagination. When we do a good job of maintaining our relationship with God, there is absolutely no limit that will stand in the way of fulfilling His purpose for us.